Welcome to the Holy Spirit's Curriculum of Joy podcast. My name is Wanika Overhuber, and my guest today is Heather Webster. Hi.
Hello, Wanika.
Pleasure to have you here. And I'd like to ask you a question that I like to ask at the beginning, and I get so wonderful answers from it, so that's why I've continued asking it. So how did you come to see the world the way you do today?
You know, I've listened to other podcasts that you've done and listened to what the other people, how they've responded to that. And my main idea is that I volunteered. I volunteered to be here, not just in this podcast, but living in this life at this time, in the situations that I've passed through. It's really interesting because one of your speakers said, "I don't know." And I was like, "I don't know either." And then another one said that a lot had to do with dreaming, you know? And I think the way that I see things today has a lot to do with kind of where I began with dreaming as a young child. Do you want me to talk more about that?
If you want me to say something, it's best to mute before that, then I know it's time to switch. So yes, you are welcome to share more about how your dreaming developed and how that started out in your childhood and what it led to.
All right. So when I was a young child, I want to say before I was 6 years old, I had a recurring dream that, you know, I would dream the same dream every night, and then I would. And in my dream, I was in a different family. I was in a different country. I had a different language, a different place. I mean, I understood this other language, but it was completely different from, or not at all different in some ways, I suppose, from the experiences and the family I was with currently, you know, at the time when I was five, you know, my family, my parents, my brothers. And this made me very curious because it was always identical every night. So it's like, what is going on? You know, I didn't understand why I kept having the same dream over and over and over in this other country with this other family and this other language and this other place at this other time. And then it led me to kind of ask myself, okay, if that was so specific in its details, then what was any different from this experience that I was having now with the current family and the current language and the current place? You know, what was distinguishing my experience that I was having now from the dream experience that I had at night? And so I went on an exploration. I thought, okay, I'll become the Christopher Columbus of the dream world. There you go. So it was my earliest career aspiration.
So how did you go about exploring your dreams, and did something shift so that you saw a connection to what was going on in what you call your current life?
Well, first I went and I looked up things in my parents' library. You know, I tried to discover what dreams were through encyclopedias, books in the library, things that had been written. You know, I did kind of a cursory kid-like research. And And all I found was that nobody really knew. You know, there weren't any definite answers. You know, there were theories and whatnot, but not a whole lot of clarity. So I decided to make of myself a guinea pig. And I would become an experiment. And so I started at a very, very young age to just rotely record all my dreams. And the experience that I started having, which was very peculiar through this process, was instead of becoming more defined, it became less defined, the differences. You know, eventually I got to the point where whatever I was experiencing that wasn't in my nighttime dreaming, you know, my daytime dreaming really wasn't all that different from my nighttime dreaming as far as I could distinguish.
Yeah, so what did that trigger in you? Did you start thinking your daytime experience was also a dream, or did it bring up that type of thought, or what happened?
Certainly did make it lend itself to the possibility that also in my waking life, I was dreaming. And even to take that idea one step further, was that behind both this experiencing life now as a human being and the dreaming of another life, behind both, I was like, okay, who's dreaming? You know. What's behind both of those processes?
Yeah, that's fascinating. So, did you find a connection between the two?
They are both part of a multifaceted memory that is within me, as far as I can tell. I mean, that's I'm guessing, but that's what it seems to me today, that there are many different kinds of memories, and we can choose to look at memories or access things from memories, but we can also choose to leave them apart and try to be as present as possible instead of basing our futures on our memories.
Yeah, that's a big thought, to say that every experience you're having is a memory. And the connection is that it's a memory. Is that the way you felt when you were experiencing it, or was that a hindsight thing?
It was a question. It was something that I asked myself because I didn't understand why something would be as clear as a language and a family and a place and a circumstance and a situation. I just didn't understand how or why that might appear to me. And so in the end, it was just, I guess, now today, I would say it's like to kind of come to an awareness or understanding that a large part of perception can be just that, you know, dreamy stuff, you know.
Yeah, in A Course in Miracles, it says life is what we're experiencing here is a dream, and it's in the past. So, and that includes even the dream states, of course, everything, right? So how do you respond to that?
I'd agree with it, totally agree with that. And also the idea that's also presented in The Course in Miracles, it's like, on the one hand, it's like dreamy fluff, and on the other hand, we have a choice, which is to recognize that's voluntary, and to recognize that if we want to relinquish illusions, you know, let them down, you know, just kind of like consider them fluff, if you will, not without judgment, you know, but just to recognize it as not necessarily the core, that we can, you know, in fact, decide to be present, or what has what in all that is loving thought or not, what to do with it.
Yeah, the choice, that's an important thing in A Course in Miracles, the choice between whether you listen to Holy Spirit or to the voice that we made up, that is the voice of separation. And A Course in Miracles, it calls it the ego.
I agree. And part for me of the beauty and the blessing of that particular teaching in that Course in Miracles is the idea of it's all voluntary. You know, nobody's saying how it has to be. It's like very much looking at us and going, kind of, you know, you have the power of decision. You have the power of choice. These are the options, you know, what are you going to do with that?
Well, in terms of the world, you have many more options, right? So Course in Miracles always says it's between separation thinking and the one in which you are whole and complete, and everything is whole and complete. So it's in the world, of course, there's many different forms that you can choose from. So how do you navigate that with that idea of you have only two options, right? And you navigate this world that says there's many, many different options.
Loving thought. There you go. There is, for me, it's real. Loving thought, you know. So it, in a sense, loving thought transcends those distances. But it isn't necessarily for us to, you know, loving thought is something very real. It is what it is. And so it isn't like we can just decide and judge what we do for ourselves at any point in time. But how can I explain that? We don't get to decide what the truth is. The truth is what the truth is. You know, we decide what we are able or willing to accept or recognize or appreciate of that at any given time.
Yeah, that is a central thought in A Course in Miracles, that there is a truth that is not determined by what we think it might be, but it's independent of that. And when we think in a way that acknowledges that truth, we are freer. We actually get free will. We recognize our free will. So that's a very powerful thing. So how do you see that picking up that free will? How do you align yourself with the truth of who you actually are, not who you think you are?
Me, I pray. You know, I meditate. I ask. You know, I put it out there in the morning. You know, I wake up in the morning and I sit in front of a candle, and I have, apart from doing the lessons, because I'm, for the first time, I'm redoing, I've gone through the workbook several times, but this is the first time I've ever gone through it at the same, like following the calendar that other people follow. And I'm finding that to be very nice and supportive, and I like it. But apart from that, part of my meditation is to just look at, okay, this is what I'd like to feel. This is what I would like to have happen. This is what I would like to experience. And it isn't me. It's like on a shared level. You know, it's almost like a conversation with humanity, if you will. You know, the recognition that when I'm in a space of what would I like to feel, that is not just me as a human individual, but then it's a whole humanity, a relationship with me and humanity that I'm talking about. What would I like to have happen? So sometimes these ideas, what I would like to feel, what I would like to have happen, what I would like to experience, sometimes they seem very, very general because they are applying to a whole group, whole world of people. You know?
Yeah, and of course in Miracles, it says we're all thinking with the same mind. So there's actually only one ego and one Holy Spirit. So, and the ego isn't real in truth. It's just it's a construct. While the Holy Spirit actually is the connection to who we truly are.
And that willingness, that availability to share, the idea that we have, you and me, you know, right now, that, all right, you know, we're with the Holy Spirit. You know, there is spirit and love and guidance, and we can share that, and we decide to share that. And part of our sharing that is through our decision to share it and communicate.
It also says that the only purpose of the body, as long as we are experiencing this dream, is for communication. And for the communication purpose, of course, is to join. It's to remember that we are one. So that's the purpose.
I think it's very powerful and to find that, you know, to kind of ask of ourselves and ask of spirit and ask of humanity to be as open as possible. You know, it was funny today, I had a kind of a flash, and I don't know why it flashed on. I have no idea why it flashed on it, but it did flash on it, which was about in the teacher's manual or whatever, it says something about open-mindedness being kind of the last thing, that kind of the last trait of the teachers of God, you know, to come along. And I was like, that makes sense to me, you know. Open-mindedness is a really powerful, beautiful thing.
Yeah, open-mindedness allows you to see clearly because you are no longer attached to a certain way of seeing. You acknowledge your own views, but you do not say they're the only views.
True. And as well, getting back to communication, open-mindedness, it kind of like opens all the floodgates, so that if somebody's trying to talk to you from another angle, even one that doesn't have anything to do with you know, the Course in Miracles. I live in Rome, so you know, we've got I'm a stone's throw from the Vatican, you know, so there's the Catholic Church is in my backyard, basically. But if it's Buddhist, or if it's Islam, or if it's tribalism, or if it's, you know, even if it's not religious, whatever, atheist, you know, whatever, you know, you got open-mindedness, the gate for communication is open pretty much with all, if there is loving thought. You know, that's the basis. But that's everything, you know. No.
But I think we can go deeper into the open-mindedness, because I think that's a very important topic that is one that we need to look at as a community of humanity and of beings. Because we are so, let's put it this way, we need it. We need it in order to feel understood, right? If I want to have the impression that I'm understood, I need to be willing to understand. And so it's really amazing. And it also allows you to switch languages that you use if you want to. You don't have to, but you may be able to speak your own language in a way that can be understood by someone speaking a different language because you're open-minded.
Yeah, it lets messages travel. Absolutely. Absolutely. Speaking of open messages, do you know what this is? No, you don't know what
this is. I don't have an answer to that. I can see what form it is, but it looks like a night lamp. Oh, it's a fishbowl. Okay.
Yeah.
A fishbowl. Okay.
And inside the fishbowl, so one of the things, you know, open-mindedness, you know, the different ways that I've approached ACIM, A Course in Miracles, has required some open-mindedness, quite a bit of open-mindedness on my part, in hopefully evolving and learning and growing ever more open-mindedness. But, you know, I consider myself a happy learner. I do not consider myself a fast learner. And the more I've explored, and I've explored a long time, and the more there's, you know, I realize that I didn't see before, or I see new things. And so what I did here with the fishbowl is, inside the fishbowl is every imperative. Now, you're a language guy, you speak a bunch of different languages, so you know what imperatives are, right? Imperatives are when it says, you know, look here, or do this, or think that, you know, it just says sit down, or shut up, or, you know, be free, whatever. Those are all imperatives, right? Because they're just saying, they're not asking a question, they're just saying it as it is, right? I took every imperative, every single imperative from A Course in Miracles, and I made them all into like fortune cookies, fortunes. That's what's in the fishbowl. every single imperative from A Course in Miracles. So I thought I would pull out some imperatives for you. Can I do that?
Of course.
All right, you ready? This one's for you, Wanaga. Tell me when. You gonna tell me when? Now? Glasses. It says, accept the function that has been assigned to you in God's own plan to show his son that hell and heaven are different, not the same. You want me to read that again? Did you get it? Accept the function that has been assigned to you in God's own plan to show his son that hell and heaven are different, not the same. Okay, let's go with that. Hell and heaven are different, not the same. True story.
So what would you like to share about that?
Well, for sure, whatever the hell is, I made it up as some sort of fiction in my mind. I don't personally think that God has done anything with hell whatsoever. I don't even really believe in hell personally. So yeah, that and heaven are different, not the same. Meaning, I guess that heaven is something, is a state of consciousness, which is real, that is distinguishable from any illusions that I might, or my ego, more correctly, might make instead. And I think the important part in all that is to remember that I don't have to choose with my ego. I don't have to agree with the ego. I've got that choice, and I can choose to go with the state of consciousness, which leads us home, as you like to say, you know, rather than hell, if I so choose.
Now, A Course in Miracles has a few passages about this distinction, but it always adds the fact that the ego isn't real, even if we experience it as real. So it's a dream or it's made up. Right? And we could say the ego is the dream, or the dream is a reflection of the separation thinking. And so when you shift to the Holy Spirit, there's no connection. So you see something totally different.
It also says in a bunch of places to not underestimate how gripping or how relentless, you know, that ego can be in twisting or shifting, you know, in grasping for our allegiance. So it's to remember to it's for us to remember where we want to put our hearts and devotion.
Another thing that it says is there's a huge, there's one thing that's in common. Both are totally logical, the Holy Spirit and the ego, except for that the ego's logic is founded on something that isn't true. That's the only, that's the difference. So the logic is there. So the ego can, is so logical that if you follow it, you'll find everything to be logic, unless you are able to see beyond that and see where the source of the ego was a thought of separation.
It's also very deceptive and tricky, the ego, in that it doesn't, part of its trickery is just like you say, it's sort of wicked in a way, if you will, even if it doesn't exist, in that it doesn't of itself welcome awareness of what it's doing. What I'm saying is that if we were aware of what it's doing, we'd be like, no. But it decorates it like it's something else. It's deceptive.
Yeah, in A Course in Miracles, the two pictures are used. The one is a weensy little picture with a huge frame that is amazingly fancy and beautiful and this and that. And if you actually looked at the picture in detail, it looks beautiful when you have the frame around it. When you look at the picture itself, it's full of blood and really ugly things. And then there's the one, the Holy Spirit's picture, that is a huge picture and has almost no frame and is, or doesn't need a frame and is absolutely, in all details, glorious and wonderful.
And it asks, you know, that's in the chapter on the two frames. It asks, and is it the frame that you want, or do you want the picture? You ready for another fortune from the fortune bowl?
I might want to add one of the other pictures from A Course in Miracles, the one where there's this place where the doors are held open and the angels are only there to keep it open where the treasure house is. And the more treasure is incorporated into your being, the more there is. It simply doesn't get less, gets more by, or I don't know even if it gets more, but the feeling of it being more is there. And more present in your life, the more you have of it. You need to unmute again.
Exactly. I'm so glad you brought that up, because what I was saying was this, that it's always there, but it's what we're allowing into, you know, our awareness of what we can kind of accept or flow with, you know, welcome at any time.
So I really think it's the experience of becoming more and more aware that makes you feel like it's more and more, but it's actually always infinitely available.
Isn't there some line in the Bible about that, about light, the light in thine eye be single or something? I think it's also in A Course in Miracles, you know, where you set your treasure, there you go. Yeah. Is it here on, you know, on earth, in this world where thieves can get at it, or, you know, is it in a safe place?
It's that in A Course in Miracles, the safe place is a place that is held open all the time. So actually, those who thought they were thieves and come there, they're not stealing. They're actually growing into awareness of the treasure that's within them. So it's a very different idea. You can act, there's no thievery possible of this treasure, because the treasure is everyone's treasure.
I'm really glad also that you mentioned that, because one of the sort of things that I passed along the way, one of the stones I stepped on along the way was, there really isn't any deception here in a greater sense, meaning you can't trick the truth. You know, it knows you don't know, or not you, but you, me, you know, we. You can't trick the truth. The truth is what the truth is. You know, so so it's kind of silly to pretend, in a sense, that we can make it be what it is. We can't. We can't make it be what it is. It is what it is.
Yeah, the truth, you know, the truth of who we are is there and has no opposite. There's no opposite to who we are, so there's no way you could debate it. So it's like in A Course in Miracles, it says only illusions can fight illusions.
I just picked another thing from my fishbowl and it applies. It says, put no confidence at all in darkness to illuminate your understanding. For if you do, you contradict the light and thereby think you see the darkness. Projection makes perception. Yeah? Yeah. But in the case of self-admittance, I'll say it's not like I didn't try to, or that I don't even in the present sense, try to. It's an ongoing situation, that remembering, that choosing, that acknowledging, that appreciating. It'd be great maybe if I could say that it's always great and fine and wonderful and perfect, and maybe it is on some level, but am I conscious of it or aware of it always? No. And so, frankly, so it's like I'm just learning, like anyone else, I suppose, about how to work with forgiveness here on this plane. Not again, forgiveness according to the Course, which is of course different than it is commonly defined, but kind of, yeah, the acknowledgement of loving thought, the acknowledgement that, or the welcoming of a greater picture or greater awareness or a growth of an availability, rendering oneself kind of in a state of humbleness, you know, like, we're in this together, we can do this together, you know, and together it will be.
Yeah, I think the thoughts on how you come to become aware of what is true are very important, because of, but it's also something that you start to experience when you're ready. So yeah, to think we could destroy something that is so beautiful and true and so wonderful is something that we think we can do. So every separation thought, we think we're destroying something. And it's not possible, because you can only attack illusions. You cannot attack what is true anyways. That's a hard thing to come to, or maybe not hard, I don't know, but it, when it comes, you become aware of it. It might be fast, it might be slow, it might, whatever, I don't know, there's many ways, but to realize that no matter what attack thoughts you've been thinking, they have never destroyed anything.
Yeah, for real. That and how can I explain it? Not sure. I just lost track a little bit of a thought there. I had it just on the tip of my consciousness, and then it floated away. Asking helps, you know, when in a moment, just like now, you know, what are you doing? Mr. The thought flew away. Okay, well, I'll ask, bring it back. And making ourselves, you were talking about the truth and how we come to that. And one of the ideas that I've had recently has been that I'm less and less convinced that it has to anything to do with jumping through hoops, you know, any sort of like mental capability that I have, you know, ultimatums that we make on ourselves about if this, then that, you know, and I'm really not so certain that that's how our how awareness is born in us. I think maybe it has something more similar to just waking up, you know, and then you just like realize, oh, I must have been dreaming. that must have been just a dream I had. Does that make sense?
Yes, it simply doesn't make sense anymore. It loses its attraction. And I think that's the beauty of it, when the attraction falls away. And I don't know exactly what leads to it or what not, right? Because as far as I can tell, no matter how much attention I put to wanting to change my mind, it doesn't happen necessarily because I want it to. It has its own ways.
One of the kind of surprising or less expected weird interpretations that I came up with from A Course in Miracles was kind of a thankfulness that things are, you know, to be thankful, to remember to be thankful that things aren't as I imagined them to be, or as, you know, I thought them to be. Like, I don't want anybody else to have to like live by my nightmare thing. Better that I'm mistaken. I prefer to be mistaken, you know, because I wouldn't want anybody to have to go through, you know, my funky illusions. No, thank you. No, not for me, not for anybody else. So blessed be. Thank goodness things aren't as, you know, I might see them.
Could also put, thank goodness things are as the truth has them be. So the same thing goes to the thought from A Course in Miracles, I'm not a body, I'm free, I'm just as God created me. So there, nothing has changed. So thank God everything is in good hands. Everything is okay. And I'm the one who's thinking it's not okay, and that's an illusion.
That's the one that was for today, I believe, if one follows the calendar studies. I'm not a body, I'm free. I'm still as God created me, and I want the peace of God. You know, that's what I'd like. Thank you very much. You know, what could be better? What could be better, really? Can I come up with something better than that? You know, can you top the peace of God? Can anybody?
Yeah, can you top perfect happiness or joy and complete and bliss, whatever the many different words there are for it? Yeah, you could ask that question.
But somewhere in the course, I think, you know, it's in the obstacles to peace. it says, you know, one of the first obstacles to peace is the desire to get rid of it. Which is really interesting. There was once a group, I can't remember, in California or something. It was a group of people who were psychic and clairvoyant. It was about psychic stuff and clairvoyant stuff. And this group had a questionnaire that it gave out. And it asked people, do you think you have, like, you know, have you ever had psychic experiences, or do you think, you know, anything telepathic's ever happened to you or whatever before? And like 78% of the people said, yes, I have, I do. And then their follow-up question was, how do I get rid of it? Because, like, peace, they're like, you know, there's something we can say now, having, you know, lived through, you know, bundles of illusions or whatever, and looked at them and like, I just think that this is a very relevant question for humanity to ask itself today is, you know, would you really want that? The peace of God? I mean, it's a serious question, isn't it?
And like you said, the question is, do I really want to fight the unhappiness all my life? Because that's unhappiness, as you were saying. So the first conflict, the first reason you're unhappy is because you're fighting it.
But it's pretending not to be. It's pretending not to be unhappiness. It's pretending to be all sorts of other things. You know, the perfect romantic relationship, ownership, possession, competition, envy, on good, they're not, better than, worse than, you know, anything, separation, anything that makes us not the same identical being as each other.
A Course in Miracles, it also speaks there's only one teacher, but it may appear as many faces in the dream, as many people in the dream, but there is, in truth, only one teacher.
And I like when the Course speaks also about hearing the voice and vision, you know, what we think of as hearing and what we think of as vision might in fact be way more we really can see with our hearts. We really can see on in all sorts of dimensions and all sorts of ways. You know, it isn't just talking about eyes and ears. It's not talking about the body. It's talking about, like you say, the one teacher coming through ways that we might not even imagine.
Well, let's go into that one teacher. Does anyone else have something to teach here? Wants to chime in? Please raise your hand by pressing on your microphone button.
I see Henry wrote something, biographies, really? You're going to be very surprised, you two. Julio's listening. I don't understand that statement, but I did read something Henry wrote the other day, which I liked very much, which was on pronouns. A Course in Miracles, something that I've looked a good bit at as well. This speech, how interesting it is.
It's so beautiful how everyone is chiming in in this journey. Oh, Henry would like to say something. There we go. Go ahead, Henry.
I was doing an exercise recently, writing on the internet with the practice of actually writing, getting the same message without using pronouns. Only I occasionally. What it was showing me was what you were talking about, these imperatives, that somehow I would have to be writing in imperatives the whole time. And then it was like, can I, as I, call myself I, or is it then, am I streaming, am I channeling truth? I mean, through the words. And I wrote something today about how words would never be able to do that. They can't. That they're always symbols. Like, you can't eat an apple. You have to have the real thing. And so it was fun to look at that idea. And it gets extremely personal when we talk about the idea of judgment. Like, are you going to judge that I am not using Holy Spirit, or am I? And we do have to do that. We don't have a choice here with looking at what somebody else writes. That's what we do, and we do that with the Course in Miracles too. Like, I think it's true. I think the Course in Miracles is true, and I've got a really, really good friend, and he thinks, no, it's just a bunch of bullshit. And well, for him, that's true.
I'm really happy you brought that up. One of the stranger things that's been happening to me lately with the Course in Miracles and the exercises and pronouns is when it says I am, or, you know, it's saying from talking from the first person, basically, in grammar, that would be. Sometimes when I read that, I don't think of that I as necessarily me, how I would perceive things. I think of it as the I, like I think of it like the Holy Spirit or Jesus or the voice that, you know, the author, as you've said in the past, Henry, who wrote this workbook and text, gave it to Helen, that is the I, and the I within me, and you, Wanika, have also said that, oh, it wasn't me, that was the voice of, you know, the Holy Spirit within me, you know, that got that message or shared that message. And so that's one of the things I've been going through. Maybe I just seem like a slow learner, that it just now seems that way to me. But I've been going through a different process with the messages that in the workbook instructions, when it says I now think of that I almost like I'm wanting to share it with the Holy Spirit that is within.
Yeah, all thoughts are thought by everyone together. So that makes it very interesting, you know, to think, okay, what I'm thinking is thought by everyone together. So everything that is resolved in me is resolved in everyone, even though we may not see it at the moment, right? Sometimes we think, oh, that person is not as resolved as, or is not as free, or that person is free, or this. All these comparisons don't make any more sense if we're all thinking with the same mind, we're all thinking the same thoughts, and actually all the actions in the dream are not real, right? Because they're just reflections of thoughts that are not who we are.
And in fact, if you think of it, it's a text, you know, it's a workbook that thousands and thousands and thousands of people have read, and they've all read the same words, and the words were, you know, I'm not a body, I'm free, I am still as God created me, and that, you know, that those same words were read by you, Annika, they were read by you, Henry, they were read by Debbie, they were read by all these different students all over. So it really could only be one eye, right? The same eye that said those words. No.
But then it gets a little more juicy when you think of it, you know, many people watch the same movies, the same series, the same things. Are we all thinking the same thoughts? And so maybe we are perceiving only a fraction of the thoughts that we're thinking, right? But we're actually thinking all the thoughts. And then you go deeper and say, okay, all these thoughts are not, most of them are illusions. So the actual thought behind it all is something else. The one that is the truth has all of these thoughts, maybe, you know, separation thinkings from that original thought. So we actually are thinking one thought, and it appears to be many thoughts.
Yeah, and also that there's choice. And, you know, we're reminded of choice. Like, do I want to share that thought? Do I want to feed into that aggregate, you know, that we are surrounded by, you know, aggregates, people saying, or, you know, news programs or talking heads or people or, you know, whatever, you know, saying, oh, it should be like this, or it's like that, or it's like this, or like that, or whatever. So, yeah, we have to make a decision there as to whether we wish to share in that perception or in that idea or not. You know, there's a lot of ideas, and we have to decide which ideas we choose to share for ourselves. No.
So I was reading something from the course this morning about exactly this, about that actually decision making is constant. And I think it's chapter 30. I'm not sure. But anyway, the way it was talking about it was really cool, because if a person really does what's called some self-observation, some, and I know that sounds kind of strange, because you have to kind of split your mind in two to have a watcher and an activity, but it's more like becoming aware of the fact of how the mind operates. And it's making decisions, like actually in this moment, that's what's happening. I'm choosing words, which ones are the most appropriate. But what I'm also doing is I'm asking, and this is a new activity, asking to not do that alone. And this is the difference between just on automatic pilot, because if you're on automatic pilot, you do have another guide, but it's not a real guide. It's just the program called ego, and that's what's running. But with the Holy Spirit, with the higher self, or you know, people call it different things in different languages, and then there would be like this this constant decision-making process and looking at, okay, do I need to see this differently because I'm upset? Then I have the recognition, I must have been using the automatic pilot, and now I'm seeing that, and okay, how can I see it different? And that's the practice of A Course in Miracles.
That's beautiful. And that's about, you know, alignment too. And by alignment, I kind of mean, you know, if regards, you know, the ego, it's like you have a choice there to be coming from a place that is aligned with God, love, holiness, or you can come from a place of separation. And so in all of those situations and interactions can serve as reminders to decide again if they're not bringing you to a place that's giving you peace, you know, that's coming from a good place. So what, you know, this things come up and it's like, what can I do with that? Let me, you know, just, I'd like to see the loving thought in this situation. And for me anyway, it's not always instantaneous. Sometimes it takes a little bit of like grinding in my, you know, allowing things to be. Like a lot of time I have to say, you know, there's got to be a loving thought in this. There's got to be some pearl of wisdom, some beautiful thing that I am not forgiving, that I'm not seeing, but I would like to see it. So, you know, help me out. You know, because again, I would prefer, you know, evidently I've kind of thrown sticks into the spokes, and I'd like to, you know, not do that if I could allow myself to not be afraid and become conscious of the sticks that I do throw in the spokes. Henry, would you like an imperative from the fishbowl?
Sure. You're talking and you're still muted, I guess.
Tell me when.
When? Gotta unmute.
Sorry about that. I'm techno challenged. The imperative says, leave the Holy Spirit his function, for he will fulfill it if you but ask him to enter your relationships and bless them for you. So there it is. Leave the Holy Spirit his function. He will fulfill it if you but ask him to enter your relationships and bless them for you. So there you go. There's your imperative. There's more if you want, a whole book worth.
Okay. I got inspired with that one. So I can't remember where I was reading recently, but it was where, you know, I think it's part in the epilogue at the end of the lessons. Maybe I was reading there somewhere. I'm not sure anymore. But what really impressed me, and that gets back to this idea of this pronoun stuff, is how Jesus, the author of A Course in Miracles, is speaking. That's obvious, and he's using the we form, and that's I had some trouble with that one, but I got it straightened out. And then he came to a place where he was saying actually that he's going to give me, or the I give you over to the Holy Spirit with now I remember, it's the lessons that to this 20 series of I am not a body, I am free. It's there, it's in that section. It's not the introduction to him, it's the description of what the lessons are going to be. And then he says that the words are going to be almost unimportant, and he's giving you over to the Holy Spirit. And I thought that was really interesting, that he Jesus was making a separation between himself and the Holy Spirit in the book. And I was trying to find what that means. And of course he is so unified with the Holy Spirit that would for me, then I thought, well, why is he doing that? And I thought, well, he's on my level. He's doing it for me. He's separating it that way for me, and he's coming on my level. And that's the whole Course of Miracles, is coming down on my level, where I am, what I'm still believing. Like I say, I am not a. I say it out loud, you know, and it requires a body to say it. So it's hilarious to say I am not a body, and you feel the whole vibration within your body from inside, and you hear your voice. And when you take a tape recorder and tape it, you say, oh, that's not me. You know, it's like, okay.
Yeah. I also read before, I don't think it was in that intro to the review, but I think it was like a lesson before it. But it was still, you know, I'm not my body. I'm free. I am, still as God created me, but instead it says, I am not a body, I am free. I hear the voice that God has given me, and it is only that which I obey. And then it says to practice that lesson, like to amplify all the other ones. So like every day, if you say that, you know, I hear the voice that God, you know, has given me, and it's that which I obey. And I've also looked at where Jesus sometimes, you know, the I am that's given the book, the author of the book, so to speak, and the Holy Spirit, and how it is really interesting when he distinguishes himself from the Holy Spirit, because they are, of course, so completely connected. So I've had to do a little bit of mental stuff for myself to try to figure that out. And the best I can come up with for myself anyway was that Jesus was a human being. He was a man. You know, he was a dude, right? And so he had a body, you know, so he's also a historical figure, so to speak, apart from this disembodied voice, which gave the course to Helen Schuckman. And yet the Holy Spirit is, you know, it's kind of like Jesus saying he's with us, in a way, because he's like us in a way. He's sharing that he too is, you know, obeying this voice that is given him. He's like ahead of the gang, he's ahead of us and all of that, but he's I don't know what the word is, empathic, telepathic. He is bringing it to, in a voluntary sense, it's like showing his volunteerism to be at our level that we might be able to learn to understand and appreciate and acknowledge and recognize. And in Italian, we say, Magari, wake up. That would be the best. That would be the best.
Yeah, I like that point of how he wants to show us that he's at the, that he's our brother. And at least that's the way he describes it in A Course in Miracles. I'm your brother. I'm your older brother, he even says. So it's very interesting to say, okay, we're all in the same boat. And he's also listening to the voice of the Holy Spirit.
So
now you turned your mic off.
I jumped.
That. My apologies. No, I was going to say back to pronouns and all that. I am curious, you know, years ago, I met a woman in Rome and we're in the English section of Feltrinelli, a bookshop, and we started chit-chatting. It was her birthday, and she's telling about her daughter and whatnot. And she was a professor of art, and she told me that in her teaching as a professor of art now, she only speaks of, you know, God as a she, and she only... You know, she changed all the pronouns basically in the Bible. You know, she said, she's like telling me, whoa, it's really different when you do that. It really gives a different impression, you know. And I've wondered about that too. I wonder about it only in the sense like I get it because, you know, I've got pronouns in two languages. And it's different, you know, in Italian, everything's masculine or feminine, and you can have, you know, 400 women and one guy, and they'll all be masculine because there's the one guy, and I get all that. I do. But the fact that the female is never, ever, ever mentioned at all. There's no mother, there's no sister, there's no girlfriend, there's no wife, there's no females. Pronouns.
Yeah, I use the word the parent when I write about it. So the parent and siblings. But I was just for the purpose of our talking, we're speaking about the words in A Course in Miracles. But personally, I use the parent and sibling or siblingship or child or things like that.
I thought about it. I thought about, that's interesting. I wonder why. And the only thing that I could come up with was that on some level, I think it is important to provide a unification. You know, so if you talk about the Father or the Creator or one, you are talking about one, and to not distract people with division. There you go, getting caught up in division. That was the only thing I could come up with.
That's an important aspect. How do we affirm oneness in language? Because language is based in a dualistic point of view or in some cases in threes or whatever, the various languages have different ways of doing it, but many languages use the dualistic style of using language. So yeah, how do you describe unification when there's no words for it? Oneness.
Us.
Community.
We.
Community.
Yeah, he was using we in many of his sentences in the Course in Miracles. And so, yeah, and what I also think is it had a lot to do with the fact that there's a huge community of people using the Christian language. And you could, or the Judaic language or the Muslim language, right? They all have the father. And so it actually affirms that connection between these monotheistic religions. Maybe.
Well, monotheism, yeah, is still coming from one, right? One united creator, one creator. But there's, you know, for me, that the creator isn't necessary. There's something masculine about it. It's as masculine as a wall or a floor or a lamp, for me personally. And in Hebrew, in previous, you know, pre-Christian Hebrew, there was a feminine. You know, Elohim is one of the names of God, or Shekinah is another. They're or female or plural, you know, meaning both. Yeah, but again, maybe it's just easier for people to think of a singularity, of a oneness, using singular male pronoun. Or maybe there's
We don't know. We don't know. You know, it could also be, you know, when a voice comes from within someone, it usually uses that a lot from that person's vocabulary. And so, yeah, we don't know, right? If the same message came through someone else, maybe they'd use parent or I don't know what, right? We don't know for sure. The message is what's important. It says it in A Course in Miracles as well. The message is what's important, not the form. And so please see it in that light if you're reading A Course in Miracles. See it for the message that it's giving, not for the form it has taken.
Yeah, well, I think women were, one, kind of used to it in that, you know, we give birth, we carry children within our bodies for 9 months, 10 months, or whatever it is. And we'll be loving, whether it's, you know, a girl or a boy, we're going to be accepting whatever it is. So maybe we already have that kind of that okayness that way. But it is curious, no.
And it's a very important topic when it comes to open-mindedness, because we have A Course in Miracles, and it affirms as one of the qualities of a teacher of God is open-mindedness. And then we have all this vocabulary that could be pointing to non-open-mindedness if one takes it that way. And that's really amazing, you know, when we say, okay, we are one, doesn't mean that you have to experience creative forces as a singular way of expressing itself, right? So it's not like Hinduism with the many gods, many faces of God, so to speak, and many figures and so on. It's no less unifying than one where there's the father or whatever figure idea. So we have to change our mind about these things as well. Yeah.
Yeah. In theory, there shouldn't be any problem like with looking at women as sisters, no? People have sisters. Do you have any sisters? Yeah, probably. I don't know. You know, but people have sisters all the time. It shouldn't be a big deal.
But there's the word sibling in English.
Not in Italian.
And so you have that word in English, so we can use that. In Italian, yes, there's the proclivity to use feminine or masculine and nothing else, right? But yeah. And in French, I think it's similar language type and so on. There's many languages that have that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
just curious to me. Also, yeah, it's just given to Helen. But so, yeah, pay attention to pronouns. I always like it when Jesus or the voice of the Holy Spirit says we. It makes me happy. It's like, solidarity. Yay. Well, that makes life easier.
Many interpretations for all of this that one could have. And one could say, okay, the masculine needs healing, so we need to have a positive image of the masculine and change that image that has been so predominant for such a long time. You know, because the image in the Bible has a lot of images where the Father is you know, has vengeance and all these things. And in a Course of Miracles, that isn't the case at all. Right, so that is an image correction as well within that. You could see it that way as well, you know, to change our minds about how we see parenthood and how we see the male bodies and what they are supposed to represent, right?
One of the, you know, ideas that runs through A Course in Miracles a lot is, you know, it's a fallacy that, you know, or a fear, just a fear fallacy, that, you know, God is holding anything against us whatsoever. No, that's all our doing. God really has no interest whatsoever in holding things against us. But, you know, in the worldly sense, for the frivolity it's worth, there is a lot of that, you know. Like I said, you know, I live up the street from St. Peter's, from the Vatican City, is literally a 10-minute walk from my house. And still today, there are, you know, problems, you know, they have problems with, you know, women in roles, and they're not alone in that. Something that's, you know, comes up for me a lot, because my mother is actually an Episcopalian priest, and so she can't take communion in the Catholic Church. You know, there's Protestants and Catholics and all those types, but, you know, I see it in the roles, and I do kind of try to ask myself, what's going on there? You know, not that I go to church or anything. I don't. I'm not religious at all myself. But it is curious to me. Yeah. It just seems like on a world scale, it seems that there's quite a bit of that going on. And there has been historically as well. I as they say, you know, Anonymous was a woman. You know, they just haven't, like, had the big, you know, advertised voice in history, in any camp, not just, you know, religious, in any camp, artistic, philosophical, mathematical, scientific, you name it.
I think as well, when we come to this language of A Course in Miracles, if it had been put in female terms, it would have been equally an image change. Because women have been seen as disciplinarians, you know, because they're the mother, they tell the kids what to do and all these things, you know. We know how that all goes. So to change an image to a loving image, one that doesn't hold anything against you, that loves you the way you are, it wouldn't matter which pronoun we use. It's still an image change, because we need to change our minds about who we are.
Yeah. Could be a challenge that way. Mm-mm. Yeah, that's a good point. That's a good point. I hadn't thought about that. It just comes up for me, I guess, in small ways, in that I have you know, biologically, a lot of brothers. Like I have four biological brothers. I don't have any sisters. I'm used to like the brother thing. And also, you know, the sister role, but I don't think too often about why certain approaches are taken. And that's a decent point, that maybe the course itself could be more readily accepted or absorbed or approached or understood if it, you know, used the pronouns that it decided to use. I'm sure that's true. Like you probably, if you changed all the pronouns to female pronouns, I bet people would be going, ew, you know, no, you know, mom,
We've heard all the stories, you know, how people throw the Course in Miracles away or get all these tantrums about it. So they would probably have the same tantrums if it were female pronouns. So maybe it's not as big a consequence as one might think. And yeah. like I said, I think one of the main things is it's the message, not the language or the form, that is important. And if we can live the message that we obviously are so enjoying in A Course in Miracles, and accept the atonement for ourselves, and therefore also open-mindedness, it certainly is beneficial.
I agree. I also think that it's part of the challenge too, is to get there's an invitation, all of that, to go beyond kind of like the baggage of words, sort of the associations of words. Like people are going to have problems. They're going to have problems with the word Jesus. They're going to have problems with the word God. They're going to have problems with the word love. They're going to have problems. If they want to have problems, they'll have problems. But it is an invitation, an open invitation, to both recognize the baggage that we have with, or associations, what I'm calling baggage, associations that we have with certain words and ideas, and to also be willing to relinquish that baggage, those associations, like, let it be fresh, you know, this, instead of, you know, Jesus that was hung on the cross 2,000 years ago, it's a Jesus that's a disembodied voice that's speaking to a psychologist at Columbia University Hospital. You know, that requires some open-mindedness, doesn't it?
We have the same thing with any title we use for anything. You know, like I have the podcast is called The Holy Spirit's Curriculum of Joy. You know, there might be someone who says, I'm not going to go on that podcast because of that title, right? I'm not going to be a guest there, right? And, you know, so we have that all over the place. Nonetheless, that's the title I've been given to give for the podcast, right? So yeah.
I want to know if the problem is the word curriculum or the word joy, like, or is it the Holy Spirit? What is the problem?
Good question. Any of them could be the issue, but I think one of the ones I've encountered is the Holy Spirit.
Okay. I was thinking joy. I was thinking joy might be a real turnoff to some people. It's like, that's kind of offensive. You know? Joy.
Yeah, so it's time to start wrapping up. So is there anything I haven't asked you or haven't drawn out from you that you'd like to share now?
No, it's been wonderful. And I'm really thankful for your invitation. And I'm thankful for this gathering, and I'm thankful for the ability to be present here. I I feel a little bit apologetic for my lack of techno sense and my being a little bit intimidated sometimes by just computer visual camera stuff. But it's been a really good exercise to me that. And just to let everyone know, anybody who's watching, that I'm thankful for them too, and that I'm thankful most of all for the light that we share, and that, you know, we can all keep joy and light in our awareness and meditations for life, for each other.
Wonderful. So is there any way that people can get in touch with you that you'd like to share if they want to?
Yeah, through your website. I'm on there. I'm Francis Webster. My name's Heather Francis. So sometimes it's Heather, sometimes it's Francis, but either one, they can get in touch with me through Facebook or whatever. I have an email too. I'm happy if they send me a private message. It's in my email too. I don't want to put it up here, but anybody who private message me that wants to chat with me is welcome to. Yeah. Happy to talk about anything.
Thank you for coming. Thank you for engaging in this conversation in which we are walking each other home, as I say, but actually I think one of the big things we're holding for each other is that we already are at home. So thank you for that. Blessings to everyone. Thank you for joining us. Please subscribe and review the podcast and tell people about it so they can get to know it. And if you want to be a guest, please reach out to me. Or if you think of someone that you think would be a wonderful guest, please let me know or let them know so they can contact me or I can contact them if that's possible. And perhaps they'll be one of my next guests. Who knows? Anyways, thank you so much. And blessings to you all. And till next time.
Till next time.